You're listening to live audio recorded by RTE Radio 1 off air at the Westport Festival of Music and Food.
Now, what do we say to that start?
That's a good start. Thank you for the terribly flattering intro. My lovely horse. There's a song.
Did you think that song would endure when you wrote it?
No. And, you know, I can't take all the credit, just most of it. Because obviously Graham and Arthur wrote the words, and I simply set them to a godlike tune of the ages.
And of course, as well as godlike tunes, this is the man who composed the theme music for Father Ted's, which I think deserves a round of applause on its own.
Thank you.
So, Neil, you're very welcome to the Radio 1 off-air stage. And what are your impressions of a beautiful Westport house so far?
Oh, it's a fabulous area. Lovely house. Never been. So, I can't wait to have a proper look around. In fact, our dressing room has the entire history of the house on the walls. But as soon as I came in there, your people came and got me. So I have yet to read it.
Do you feel appropriately dressed in a corduroy jacket for the house? So,
I know I can't take clothes off. It's a problem.
How are you putting them on?
I'm really good at putting them on, and then I can't take them off because the slightest draft, and I'm going, oh, I should have worn a jacket. Yeah. But you know, it's a big old drafty house, so I'll need the old corduroy jacket in there.
Would you call yourself a festival person?
No.
You just missed almost an hour. You missed almost an hour of reggae music. Do you like reggae music? Would you have been dancing out there to the Barley Mob?
I love reggae music.
That's not what you said to me, but now, I want to get into your life and your career with the Divine Comedy, but there's one important question I want to ask first. Together with Thomas Walsh of the Duckworth Lewis Method, you produced two cricket-themed pop albums. I want you to explain to me and to the people here in the tent, the rules of cricket.
Now, I don't think they want me to do that.
Do you want to know the rules of cricket?
What do you not understand? It's like a man comes up and throws a ball at a man with a stick and he hits it.
Why is he always rubbing his trousers?
The man with the ball... He's rubbing the ball on his trousers to shine one side so that it affects the aerodynamics of the ball through the air, that the shiny side, for some reason... I think it goes slower, bizarrely, and so it curves in the air.
And why do they drink so much tea during a match?
Tea?
Yeah.
Well, they drink a lot of tea, drink a lot of lager, a lot of Pimm's. Just drink a lot, really. Yeah. But there's not a lot else to do, really.
Well, the Duckworth-Lewis Method is a classic collaboration between yourself and Thomas, and collaboration seems to be an important part of your artistic life.
Which strikes me as bizarre for someone who really didn't enjoy collaboration for a long period. I didn't do anything with anybody else for, until maybe about 97, 98. And I guess it was just because I started being asked to do things.
And that was Robbie Williams was the first person, wasn't it?
Yeah, which is kind of weird.
Unlikely bedfellows. How did that come about?
Just literally got on the phone and asked. And you couldn't say no, really, especially at that time when he was the king.
Well, my brother gave me a cassette copy of Liberation back in 1993. I was 16 years old, and hand on my heart here, that record kind of changed my life, and I've been a fan of yours for 21 years. And it's my humble opinion that you've written some of the best lyrics in Irish songs over that period.
Thank you very much.
Now, how do you marry them? Is it the lyrics first? Do you marry to the music or vice versa?
What I do is I sort of spend most of my sort of working hours writing music, and most of my sort of the time when I'm not working thinking, well, I don't necessarily sort of sit down and think about words. I just kind of, in life, words happen to you, and hopefully you've got a pen and a piece of paper, Or I put them on my little notes thing on my phone.
On your iPhone.
Yeah.
So tell me about the songwriting process, Neil. Is it a 9-to-5 business type thing, or do you wait for a melody to gently caress you in the night? Or slap you around the face like a
wet paper? I have never been gently caressed by a melody.
Do you sit down to write a song,
I
or do you wait for inspiration?
No, I don't sit down to write a song. I just sit down to have fun with instruments. And there's something about that tunes happen. And, I don't know. I'm just lucky. I think if you wait for inspiration to strike, it's never going to happen. You know, you have to just sit down and enjoy making music. And things sort of coagulate into forms. So there you go. And that's how to write songs.
And when did you realize you had a grasp for it? How old were you?
I was about 15 when I think I wrote a half-decent song. Yeah.
And what were you writing about when
I'd
you were 15?
I'd been trying to write since I was about 13. What I was writing, because it was the early 80s, I was writing about war and politics. Yes.
Well, because you grew up in Enniskillen and you were born in Derry, yeah. So that was something that would have informed you at the time, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, I guess, yes. It's sort of certainly a little later on, after my teenage sort of years, I stopped writing about politics and war and went completely the opposite direction for my entire career. I think as an adult, you just... I just didn't want to think about it anymore, you know?
You addressed it in your 1998 song, Sunrise. I was born in Londonderry and I was born in Derry too.
Well, yeah, I just kind of wanted to get all of that out of there, you know, out of my head, onto the page, and then never have to talk about it again.
Well, a lot of Northern Irish people, Neil, a lot of Northern Irish people get frustrated that, in a way, us in the South are a little disinterested in the Northern question. Now, would you agree, or do you think it's all behind us?
It will never be behind us because, you know, history won't go away, ever. But it can be contained and, you know, societies can gradually mutate and evolve. Thank you very much. What was I talking about? yes.
Have we left it all behind?
Mutating
us?
Society.
Well, did you ever imagine a situation of the Queen being led around, you know, Northern Ireland, the sights of it by the likes of Martin McGuinness?
Exactly. It's incredibly unlikely. And it's all good, you know. Anybody who says, oh, that's a bit odd, well, you know, get over yourselves. There's one thing sort of maintaining sort of cultural traditions, and there's another thing sort of just reenacting the mistakes of history. You know, you have to kind of get over the problems, and that's the end of my tuppence worth.
Okay, so writing the song Sunrise, that it. I've put it down. I put it on tape. I'm going to move on. Well, let's move on. And you tend to write about what's going on in your life, it's fair to say, and what you've been observing. And I think you nailed the financial crisis 4 years ago with your song, The Complete Banker.
Yes, I changed everything.
Should check out and buy, indeed, on YouTube, which featured on your album Bang Goes the Knighthood. And you wrote The Very Beautiful Charmed Life about the birth of your daughter. Now, what kind of feelings or events are influencing your writing now?
I'm not telling you.
But we're going to find out, aren't we?
You are going to find out, but maybe, you know, they tend to be... you know, clothed in abstraction. You don't want to sort of just say, I love her, you know? That's kind of a bit on the nose.
You're in love, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
In a state of love, excellent.
You know, it's nothing to, you know, she's a pain in the arse as well.
In what way?
I'm not going into that.
Do you feel that musicians and artists are writing about the world as they see it, or do you think there's too much navel-gazing going on these days? Or do you keep an eye on the pop landscape?
The navel-gazing thing, I don't mind a little navel-gazing as long... as you gaze at your navel with a sense of humor.
Or someone else's navel.
Or someone else's navel. That's usually more enjoyable. What I find is lacking in pop music at the moment is a sense of humor. Is, you know, everybody seems to take themselves terribly seriously. Mm. And usually with very little cause.
And what do you make of the reality TV shows that are everywhere at the moment? Especially the pop ones.
I've just done one.
Oh, you have? Tell us, which one?
The Portrait Artist of the Year on Sky.
Okay.
They painted me. You know, I could get down with that one. That was great.
What was your pose?
I'll show you.
Oh, cool.
Try doing that for 4 hours.
Well, your father, Brian Hannan, was the Bishop of Clogher. And did he have any concerns for you when you decided to pursue a life in pop music?
No more than the average parent. I mean, my mum and dad were both kind of, yes, okay, son. I was lucky I was the third of three. The third, yeah, that does make sense, doesn't it? I was the littlest, the babby.
Were you spoiled?
I was a little spoiled. I didn't have to do the washing up very much. Now I do it every bloody day.
Was there a lot of music in the household?
There was a lot of, you know, pop music because of my elder brothers.
What were they listening to?
I have to thank them for a lot of my influences, really.
So what sort of music were they listening to?
Well, my eldest brother, Des, the first band that he was really obsessed by was the Electric Light Orchestra, ELO.
Brilliant.
And I became similarly obsessed and knew all of their stuff inside out. And that's pretty much the reason that Thomas and I got together, because we both absolutely adored ELO and cricket. That, and I kind of was mad into the synth pop around sort of 78 to 82 vibe.
OMD?
I loved OMD. Yeah, Architecture great. And Morality. Great record.
Cool.
Human League, Soft Cell, all of them. Love them.
There seems to be more synths on stage these days at festivals, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's coming back.
The weird thing is that I didn't sort of... Well, I didn't get it. I didn't make that music because I never got a synthesizer. I didn't really know where to buy them or how, you know... They just were these other things that Howard Jones had and I didn't.
Okay.
So I wonder what my music would have been like had I ever bought one.
Did you pick up a guitar first?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Well, after playing the piano for years, you know. I kind of gravitated towards very noisy indie music in the 80s and My Bloody Valentine. Ride, very favourite band of mine.
Yes.
But the
Divine Comedy sound was quite different.
Yeah, but if you listen to the first little sort of...
Fanfare for the Comic Muse.
Yeah, that's just
it's
jangly.
An indie record.
And I very rapidly, mostly because I started listening to Scott Walker, sort of went in different directions.
Would you say your singing style has been influenced by Scott?
I basically do a bad impression of Scott Walker. That's my voice.
I think he does a great impersonation of Scott Walker, doesn't he, ladies and gentlemen?
No, they don't think so.
Well, I want to talk about your dad again. You know, he's had a huge influence on your life. Can you tell us about your dad?
Well, his name is Brian Desmond Anthony Hannan. He went to Trinity, studied theology. Became a minister, ministered for many years. You know, he loves motorsport, Formula One fan. He got pneumonia once in the early 60s when he went to Le Mans and couldn't find anywhere to stay, so he slept on the pavement on the track, got pneumonia.
Well, the reason I mentioned your father... is because 6 years ago, wasn't it, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And how has that impacted on your family?
Drastically, but I don't think I'll go into it here.
Okay. How is he doing now?
you know, not bad, not good, but yeah. But we all have our travails.
No, that's for sure. But you did address it, you know, in a beautiful song for our fathers in distress. Mm. That was performed in the South Bank Centre, wasn't it?
Yeah, in the Royal Festival Hall, they kindly commissioned me to write a piece, and they wanted the organ used that they'd just refitted. So I thought, organ, Dad, great, you know, it all fitted together.
Did he enjoy the piece?
He thought, that's a nice noise.
And what did your folks make of your music?
They've had varying opinions, you know, but generally they seem very proud, you know. My dad was always very into Don't Look Down on Promenade, especially the rant about meeting God at the end of the song. You know, he didn't look upon it as a sort of thoroughly atheistic rant. He just thought it was an interesting sort of conversation with God.
That featured on your album Promenade, which is 20 years old this year, isn't it?
Shut up. Yeah.
But things really... You broke through with your next record, Casanova. Mm. And did you really expect things to go through the roof in the mid-90s as they did for you?
Well, you see, it's going to sound immodest because, you know, I wanted them to.
Of course.
So to say that I didn't expect it would be a lie because that's what I was aiming for.
You talked about being quite cocky and confident in the 90s. And did you ever get involved in any beefs, any pop star spats?
No, I'm too well brought up, really. I could never do a Liam. No, I've just had a history of real faux pas with people. You know, like the first thing I said to Simon Le Bon was, "What age are you?" And it wasn't being mean. It was just we'd been talking, trying to work out his age from the records and when they were released. And he leapt back and went, "Well, I've sold a lot of records." We both found each other later in the TV program behind the scenes and sort of apologized at the same time to each other. But, you know, all these things, I just talk before my brain gets into gear. There are too many to mention, really.
Well, John Cale of the Velvet Underground spoke. He was asked about his former bandmate, Lou Reed. And this is one of the best put-downs I've ever heard in rock music. He says, "What do you think of Lou Reed?" And he says, "I'll put it to you like this. You either like Lou Reed or you've met him." Without
I've,
naming
I've
names.
Met him.
Yeah. What was he like?
He didn't say anything to me.
Okay. Has that happened to you as, you know, your success grew and I guess you got to meet a lot more people in the industry? Were you let down by anyone?
Yes, but I can't obviously tell you who. But, you know, it's like, it's not my business to be let down. It's like they're just being normal humans. And it's like, I think it's your expectations which are let down. Because you want them to be the gods that you've made them into. Mm. You know, I'm sure I let down hundreds of people on a daily basis.
And tell me about those gods. Randy Newman's one as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I've never met Randy. I bet he'd be a real awkward sod. Yeah, but I mean, you know, Bono was a huge hero to me in the 80s because I was 16 and Irish. It was the law. And then I thought I was well past that in my 20s. When I finally met him when I was 27, I went to pieces. My legs went from under me and he had to hold me up. It was like, it was some really sort of suppressed memory that had just come straight back out. And I was like, "It's Bono!"
Did you feel God-like energy pass through you as he held you up?
I really did. A strong embrace for a small man.
How do Irish audiences, you've been playing for the last 20, almost 25 years, how do they differ from the audiences abroad? You've got a big following in France.
Yeah, France has always been good to me, as has Portugal, but they never get a mention because they're Portugal.
Okay.
I don't know. There are sort of generalizations one can make about every territory, and yet you tend to go back to them and the generalizations are exploded. You know, it usually depends on the situation, on the gig, what time of the day it is,
okay,
what the sort of demographic of the audience is. There's so many different variables. So I'd be unwilling to say that the Irish audience is the greatest audience in the world.
Yeah.
So I didn't say it.
So are you,
but
playing,
it is.
Are you playing solo tonight or with a band?
I'm playing with a band.
Fantastic.
I know. My old band, I kind of the school of 2004, which, I mean, I sort of did solo shows for the last 5 years, really, and it's been a blast on stage, but it's been really boring afterwards, you know? So I thought...
Do you miss the camaraderie?
Yeah, I do, crack? I do. It's like in the van on the way from the hotel to the gig, I talked more than I have done in 5 years of shows, you know? Just because, like, oh, my God, I've got a band, I can talk about football.
Because the Divine Comedy has been like featured a revolving cast of musicians over the years, but it's always been you. So are we going to, is this a new phase of the Divine Comedy, you with a band, or is it just for the shows?
Oh no, I think I'll do this for a while, until I get sick of them. They're lovely people, really. Or until I run out of money.
I think Mike Scott has had more Waterboys. I'm not sure who's had more members, the Waterboys or the Divine Comedy. Do you know how many members it's been at this stage now?
It could be getting on for like mid-20s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not too bad. I think Mike Scott's up to like
79. That's not counting orchestras.
Okay.
Then
so
it
you're
would
in
be
the
like
hundreds, though.
Into the, well, 60s. Yeah.
You won your edition of Celebrity Mastermind a couple of years ago. A brain box
indeed,
as well as a musical genius, ladies and gentlemen.
The questions are easier on Celebrity Mastermind than on the real
thing.
Well,
no, your chosen subject was Frasier, and I thought the questions were quite tough. So, outside of Frasier, what are your other passions in life outside of Frasier and music, obviously?
Not a lot, really. Seinfeld. passions. Dogs. Child. Woody Allen, long novels, history. I love history. I read too much history, and I read recently that especially men, when they get to a certain time of life, they start reading history. Oh God, that's me, you know. Anyway,
what particular period are you into?
I'm really into the Middle Ages at the moment, you know, especially sort of around, you know, 1000, 1100.
Okay. Is that because you're approaching the Middle Ages yourself? I'm not far behind you, Neil. That's not a jive at all.
No, you're quite right. It is. No, I love all that. But I love ancient stuff as well, and I like 18th, 19th century. Oh, I love it all. It's great.
Now, I touched on age, and what would you say to a 21-year-old Neil Hannon if you got a chance to meet him?
First of all, I wouldn't want to meet him.
What was he like?
I can't say in front of nice people. I don't know. I mean, his heart was in the right place, but he was, to say socially inept would be an understatement.
Okay.
Because, you know, didn't have a lot of friends growing up. That's probably my fault, but I was just really awkward. And so it meant that, like a lot of, you know, sort of awkward, shy people becoming pop stars, they use that kind of thing to have something to talk about, you know. So basically, I only ever talked about myself, which I'm doing right now. But it's only because you keep asking me questions.
Do you find you've mellowed so as you've gotten older?
I have mellowed. I think I've become a slightly better human being. But, you know, that's not necessarily good for the music. As so many artists have proved, you do not have to be a nice human being to make excellent music. you know?
Okay. So what kind of direction is the music going in? So do you have concerns about getting mellower in your age? That it's affecting
your writing? I try to be mean on record. I try to be horrible.
So will we get a death metal album out of you?
The next one's going to be pretty odd, I have to say. It's shaping up to be a bit of an oddball.
When are we going to hear it?
Next year.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That'll be 5 years now, Neil. That's too long.
It's about right for my time of life. If you're still making albums, you know, after 25 years, you have to spend at least 5 years between, or else people are so sick of you.
You've experienced life on a major label, and now the Divine Comedy Records, you are your own label. Is that harder work, or do you have to be more disciplined? Are you your own manager as well for those sorts of things?
To be honest, I was always the one, you know, egging the companies on, you know. I never needed to be kicked up the behind to make a record because I was always trying to make them faster and faster. I've always been quite motivated. I've never suffered from writer's block, just writer's diarrhea more. So I've not a problem with sort of being my own boss. But anyway, it's not really true. My manager, Natalie, is my boss, even if it doesn't say so on the company card.
Have you ever considered what life would be like if you weren't doing music? What would you be doing?
I always said that I'd probably be making wicker baskets in a craft shop in Enniskillen if I wasn't doing this. I'd be hopeless, because this is all I know how to do. So I'm very lucky that you bought the records.
Well, you are a weaver in a way, a weaver of beautiful music. And thanks so much for being our guest this evening. But Neil Hannon and the Divine Comedy, a full band, will be appearing on the Marquee stage here in Westport at 9:45 this evening. I, for one, can't wait to see him. Before I let you go, Neil, dead or alive, who would be in your dream band?
Maurice Ravel.
Not an orchestra now, because we don't have time.
Ravel on piano. I'd have... was it Lal Tolhurst, I think, was the name of the drummer in Ride?
Okay.
I have a feeling.
He's alive.
Great drummer. On guitar... Yeah, Kevin Shields. My Bloody Valentine. On where have we got to?
Give us a bassist.
Bass. Herbie Flowers.
Cool. On synth.
Can I have two?
Okay.
Ralph Hutter and Florian Schneider from Kraftwerk. Awesome. I want to see this band.
Okay, what are they going to be called, finally?
They're going to be called Heroes of the Resistance.
Fantastic. Neil Hannon, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Neil Hannon and Carl Murray.
RTE Radio 1 Off Air at the Westport Festival of Music and Food. Follow RTE Radio 1 on Twitter for more.